Welcome, and thanks for joining me today on Mortgage Manager Playbook, a podcast for sales leaders who want to improve their team's sales performance and originate more loans. I'm Pat Sherlock, your host. Today, I am super excited to have Eric Mitchell, the author of The Why of Money, How to Get Out of Your Own Way and Finally Earn What You Deserve. And Eric is well known within our mortgage industry. He's presently Chief Revenue Officer at Client Direct Mortgage, who's with Gold Star and AmeriFirst, and has had a long, successful career within mortgage lending. So hi, Eric.
Hey, happy to be here.
Well, I'm excited about your book. I thought it was great, and I thought it's something, a topic that I wanted to go into a deeper dive. And I highly recommend those listening today to go out and go buy his book, because he's really talking about really important issues. So let's start, Eric, with the most important issue is, why did you decide to write this book?
So I had a very traumatic moment in my life in 2005. One of my mentors was doing a site visit. I was living in Minnesota at the time. It was 2005, right? So I'm making more money than I'd ever dreamed of making. Sure. In my wildest dreams, I've never dreamed of making the amount of money I was making. And I was very happy, but I was being coached, and one of my mentors was doing a site visit and was going through some things that I could improve upon. And at the end, he was congratulating me, hey, first of all, you're doing great. I mean, there's improvements to be made, but overall, you're doing great. But I'm just curious, Eric, like, what are you going to do with the money? Why are you so driven? What's your why? And I could tell in his eyes, right? And this is one of my mentors, right? Like I thought of him as almost a god.
Sure.
Right. And I could tell from his eyes that this is a really important question.
Yeah.
And I had no idea how to answer it. And I looked at him, I said, I don't understand the question. And I remember the look on his face was almost like he was disappointed, like I had just disappointed him. Mm. And I found it to be just bone crushing. Like I'm disappointing one of my mentors by not being able to answer this question. Mm-hmm. So we had a pretty good discussion about it. And he tried to explain purpose, right? Like in my brain, you make money because that's what you're supposed to do. You just go out and make money. Like, what do you mean? Why do I make money?
Mm-hmm.
But it put me on this path of, why do I want to make money? Mm-hmm. What am I going to do with the money? Like, how, if I were to answer that question in a better way, what would that sound like?
Mm-hmm.
And so I started talking to a lot of my peers, a lot of my friends, a lot of people in the industry that I knew that were doing well. And I asked them the same question, like, do you have mm-hmm. a why? Like, well, yeah, of course I have a why. It's like, oh, okay. What's your why? And so it put me down this path of trying to discover, like, what does that mean? Because I didn't have that in my life. Like, my parents were absentee. And so there was nobody guiding me in that mm-hmm. area.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started seeking out the ultra successful, right? Mm-hmm. Those that are in the mortgage, real estate, financial planning, mm-hmm. That are making millions of dollars. Like what's your why? Like what's driving? Because you don't need to make $10 million a year in sales.
Mm-hmm.
You want to, no one's going to argue against it, but you right. don't need $10 million a year, right? We can all live on far less than that. So why do they go so far past what they need? Like, and so mm-hmm. what I learned is 99% of salespeople sell what they need and they stop.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They live paycheck to paycheck and that's it. But mm-hmm. 1% go way past what they need. And so those were the people I sought out. And what I noticed was the answers that came back all fell into one of five categories.
Right.
And not one of them said it was for the money.
Right.
Not one. Not a single one. It was never about the money. The 99% living paycheck to paycheck, it's about the money. The 1% right. that are building wealth, it's not about the money. So I said, okay. So if it's not about the money to be successful, then what are the five categories, right? And I quantified it, tested it. I've even created I have some videos about some games that I play proving the concepts. Mm-hmm. And then I got it to a book publisher by coincidence. A friend of mine forwarded off a treatment that I, ran up the flagpole. And next thing I've got a book publisher publishing my book.
Well, you talked about, and I'm glad you brought this up, about the five drivers that you saw of the one percenters. So share about what those five drivers are and talk about when you said you did the research, it sounded like you were talking to these ultra successful. So share about that also. So what are those five drivers?
So I'll start with when you talk to somebody who's making millions of dollars in sales and you ask them about their why, typically I would receive the normal responses, politically correct responses, right? And well, I do it because my family means everything and I really want
Sure,
to give
sure.
back to the community and it's all about my customers, right? Like it's like
Yeah.
no. And so what I've learned is if the person is telling me their why and they're not weeping while they're describing it, then it's not it, right? If I see
Yeah.
tears, I'll believe you.
Yeah.
And people say, "Oh, Eric, I'm not going to sit there and cry." I'm not telling you need to cry, but I'm telling you if you're not, then you're not deep enough. You haven't gotten to the core yet. You're dealing with the symptomatic things that are not real to you. And then every single person I've ever talked to, if I can talk to them for about 10 minutes and ask them questions and they're willing to answer the questions, we always get to the nerve. Always get to the nerve. They go, there it is. Okay, now we're on to something. Because it's got to take the breath out of your lungs. Because then you'll do the work. Then
Correct.
if you can get latched onto that. So one category is lifestyle enhancements. And so people think, oh, you mean I'm going to work hard because I want a Ferrari? No, it's not the Ferrari or the big house or that's not what it is. It's what does that mean to you? And so typically this is somebody who came from third world conditions. They came from a country and they're like, I'm never going to go back. I'm just going to outwork you. I'm going to work 20 hours a day, sleep for three, right? Have 1 hour of some kind of food or decompression or go to the bathroom. I'm just going to work 20 hours a day. I'm just going to outwork you. And you can see it all the time. People coming from the immigration process, right? They come here
Sure.
and I get to own my house. Like I get to own it. It's mine. Oh, I'll work 20 hours a day, 7 days a week. Like, are you kidding me? And so they build wealth because in their mind, I'm never going to go back. Right. And so that drives their activities. And that may not apply to everybody, right? You don't need all five, you just need one. You can have more than one, but you need one. So that drives some people. Number two is emotional gratification. So there's an emotional moment that they seek. And so you can see it in like famous interviews where you'll see a football player and they get drafted and they're like, "Hi, like you're the best player in the NCAA. Like what drives you to work this hard?" And they're like, "I just want to buy my mom a house." Ah, he wants to
Wow,
buy
yeah.
his mom's house. It's not about the money. It's not, right? He just has this picture in his head of his single mom raising five kids, of which he's one of them, and she's this saint in his mind, and he wants to hand her the keys to a house, and he'll break through skulls to get there. And it doesn't matter. There's no price he's not willing to pay because he's looking for that emotional gratification moment, right? So that might be something for someone. That was a big driver for me for 30 years. I got my moment. Right. So it collapsed, which is also, you got to understand if you have a driver that collapses because you got what you were, right? You have to replace it with something. Don't say, "Oh, I got it. I'm good now." No, your life goes very bad if you don't replace it with something. So an example would be Janis Joplin. She was driven by being wanting to be the number one female recording artist in history, and she got it. She got the moment. Didn't replace with anything. Now she's got no purpose. Now she's got no driver. So she became a drug addict.
Correct.
Right? And so it's not good. You have to replace it with something. The driver has to be there. So number three is taking care of your parents, right? And so some people, right? My mom, lost her husband, my dad passed away, or vice versa, or they're both still alive, but they're not ready for retirement. I'm gonna have to take care of them. I have to put them into hospice. I need an extra $10,000 a month just to take care of my parents. And so I'm gonna work hard because I gotta take care of my parents. Four is opportunities for your children. And so I'm in the wrong school district. I need to buy a bigger house. I need to start a business that they can take over one day. I need to create a legacy for my children. I need to, whatever that is, right? That could be a driver. And then the fifth one is legacy. I need to leave a fingerprint on the planet. I need there to be permanency to my existence. And so I'm going to build a hospital. I'm going to build an orphanage. I'm going to build a school. I'm going to do something that's permanent. And so you don't need all five, but you need one. And so if you do a deep enough dive on yourself, you have one. It's just probably buried because it's from a place of trauma.
True. So how does someone, in other words, you were researching by talking to these ultra successful people, and they were willing to share their trauma, is what you really are saying. And this trauma, talk about it sounded like they were able to do that pretty quickly, and that they already had actually established their why, whereas most people do not, that 99% that you talk about all the time. Is
Yeah,
that
I mean, think of any trauma that any of us have, right? And by the way, I've never met somebody who doesn't have trauma. I mean, there's
Yes.
certainly different degrees of trauma. I'm not
Correct.
saying all trauma is the same,
Right.
but I've never met somebody who doesn't have some level of significant trauma.
Right.
And so when you have trauma, what do you do with it, right? You cover it up, you bury it, you put it in a lockbox in your brain, and you bury it as deep as you can because nobody wants to feel their trauma. But that creates problems. Right? Like when we do that, it's still there. It affects our decision making, whether we think it does or doesn't matter, it does. And so you got to find a way to uncover it and heal it. And so a good friend of mine said something once to me. He said, everything we do in our lives that's significant is for one of two reasons. We're either trying to heal trauma or honor something or someone. We're trying to heal or honor. If we're undertaking something significant. And so luckily with my NLP training, neuro-linguistic programming, I was able to ask questions in such a way where I could allow someone to feel safe to go that deep quickly to get to a place of meaning. It's easier to get someone to go to a place of trauma if there's meaning behind the conversation. Like there's a purpose and there's meaning behind it. And so luckily I'm able to ask questions in such ways to get there pretty quick to help people feel safe. But when they do, I haven't experienced anybody yet that when they get there, it's not a significant moment in their life. Like, oh my God. Yep, there we go. There we go. So now are you prepared to fight through the battles? Oh my God, God help the person who gets in my way. Are you kidding me? There we go.
So, do you think, Eric, that people that are attracted to sales and actually do well are doing it really for that reason, where other types of positions, you're kind of like riding the flow and whatever. But with sales, you have to really ask these types of questions because it's a very difficult career choice. Talk about that.
Yeah, I actually have a different opinion on that. I think the 99% of people that are attracted to sales are attracted to it because we are misfits. We're not hireable in the corporate world. I know I'm not hireable.
Yeah,
Like
well, I agree with you. I'm not either. Sorry.
yeah, like
Sorry.
the Wells Fargos of the world. Like I remember Wells Fargo just using them specifically. A long time ago, this is like 15 years ago, they wanted me to come on and be a regional manager. And I'll play nice, right? I'll go in and talk to the guys, and I say, guys, and this is 15 plus years ago. And I said, so here's an example, guys. I'll just cut to the chase. So see that photocopier out there in the hallway that the processors and the underwriters and everybody uses to make the paper files? Like, yeah. So if that photocopier, that machine goes down, right? It's broken. What's the protocol for me to get it fixed? Because they're all they none of them can work now,
Gotcha.
right? What's the protocol for me to fix that machine? They're saying, oh, and the guy reaches up onto the bookshelf and he pulls out a 6-inch binder. He says, well, the protocol is I'm out. Stop. I'm out. I'm out. I'm already out. Because here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to walk over to the machine. There's a sticker on the machine with a phone number for the local company to come and fix it. I'm going to tell them they have 1 hour to get here or we're switching companies. I'm not going to pull your manual out. I'm not going to do it.
Yes.
right? Because the team needs the machine up and they need it up now. And I'm going
Right.
to do whatever I have to do to get it up. And so if you don't want me doing that, then don't hire me because that's why I'm not going to follow your rules.
Right.
Right. And they're like, oh, yeah, Eric, that's not a fit. I was like, yeah, that's why you don't want me, guys. Because I'm going to
Right.
do what's right,
Yes.
period. I'm not going to look up the rule book to find out if what's right is in
Right.
the rule book. I won't do it.
I'm actually saying the same thing, and let's do a deeper dive on this. My own personal opinion, and I'd love to hear. Everybody wants the rainmaker, this ultra successful type of salesperson, but ultimately, they really don't want them because of what you just said, because they don't follow the rules. It's almost like a conflict that really, by definition, I think financial institutions in particular are really caught between they want a rainmaker. But they really don't. They can't stomach
You're
it.
100% correct.
Yes.
The best metaphor I ever saw, Simon Sinek did a presentation about his training with the Navy SEALs. And he found it fascinating. He said, in a sales organization, right, and he drew a graph, right? You've got performance
Right.
versus trust. Performance versus trust, right? And so the biggest performers in your company in a sales organization, right? The bigger the performer, the less trust you have in them. They're not
Right.
loyal. Right, they're
Right.
gonna pile drive everything to get the job done. You would never leave them in a room alone with your spouse, right? Like low on the trust scale,
Yeah.
right? But in the Navy SEALs, they'd rather have somebody high on the trust scale versus high on the achieving scale. I can teach you how to be a Navy SEAL, but I can't teach you to be a good human. I can't teach you to have integrity. I can't teach you to take care of my kids if I die. I can't teach that. You're either that human because your parents taught that to you or you're not. And that's more valuable to be a SEAL than the achieving.
Right.
But in a sales organization, we invert it and then we wonder why we got problems.
Right. Which leads to the issue, and I'm curious about your thoughts. Going forward in this world, salespeople are needed more than ever. And we actually are not, I don't know that salespeople are really recognized that it is this entrepreneurial side. It is going to be somebody that doesn't follow the rules. And so, but I think you need sales more than ever because at the end of the day, everybody is a commodity business. So, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think the mortgage industry has the same legacy problems as other verticals. The comparison I make would be doctors. And so you're going to be a doctor and you have to be an intern, go through your internship, right? And through your doctor internship, you have to be working 48-hour shifts.
Right.
Why? Because that's the way it's always been done. And
Yeah.
doctors will say, well, I had to do it, so they have to do it.
Right.
Yeah, but do you want to be a patient walking into an emergency room dealing with the doctors who's on his 47th hour of his shift?
True.
No, I don't. Like it's broken. So why aren't they fixing it? Because it's a legacy problem, right? You've
Right.
got a whole bunch of doctors that are saying, well, I had to do it, so they have to do it. And so the mortgage industry has the same legacy problem. Like, why do you ask a loan officer who's supposed to be really good at selling to
Right.
also have high attention to detail?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
It
Yeah.
makes no sense. They're not
Right.
going to,
Right.
right? And so you have these loan applications coming in that are half wrong or half empty because that's not their skill set. Their skill set is to be an extrovert and to create relationships, not have high attention to detail. So why aren't we building our industry accordingly? And
I
the answer is, well, that's what I had to do back in the day. And so that's what loan officers need to do. It's like, or how about we fix it and change? How about
Right.
that?
Well, you're on one of my favorite topics, but I do think with Dodd-Frank, what happened corporately is that all of the things that really salespeople are not good at and really shouldn't be doing is now pushed downward. And so instead of recognizing they should be out influencing, we need influencers, which is what they're good at doing. So I agree with you 100%. So let's get into the actual items and of how you can, in other words, move your 99%er to the 1%. And I thought the interesting part about your book, you started out with talking about go get a mentor. So, which was your number one chapter, which I thought was very interesting because I don't know that people do that and I don't know that they value that. So talk about, share your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so the comparison I make there is you're in high school, you're a boy, you're in high school, you're on the football team, right? And you do something wrong in practice and the coach yells at you and tells you to run six laps. Do you argue with the coach? What happens if
No.
you argue with the coach? Well, now it's 12 laps.
Gone. Yeah.
Argue or now you're cut.
Right.
Like there's no arguing. You just say thank you, sir, and you run the laps. The coach grabs you by the face mask and starts screaming at your face. Do you scream back? No. So when did we lose that? When did that, when, at what age did we think we shouldn't respond that way anymore to somebody who's qualified to give us the feedback? Because here's my experience is that when one of my, and I'm always coached. I'm never not coached. I have multiple coaches depending on the category in my life. But when somebody who's qualified to give me the feedback gives me the feedback, it never feels good, ever. Like I go, woohoo, I suck. No, like that's not the moment, right? But what you have to be able to do is accept the accountability. You have to accept the fact that I'm a flawed human. I'm doing the best that I can. Somebody who's qualified is giving me feedback. I need to listen to that feedback and seek to improve. I need to get better, right? And getting better might mean, you know what? I'm going to hire someone on my team to do that because I'm never going to be good at that. That's just not my engine. And so I'm just going to hire someone on my team because that feedback is important and I need that on my team. I'm just going to have somebody else be responsible for it. Great, you've solved it, right? But don't say, no, my way is no. Your way closed how many units last month? Right? And if the answer is one or two, then you have to accept the responsibility that your way doesn't work. And that doesn't feel good. It doesn't. I know that it doesn't. I've been there. Right? And okay, so what way can I embrace that will get me to five? And then I have to change and I'm going to become a totally different engine to get to 10. Because whatever got you to 5 units a month won't get you to 10. Whatever got you to 10 won't get you to 15. It'll keep you at 10. And I see loan officers all the time, right? They'll say, oh, I've been doing this 20 years, right? Really, 20 years. Okay, how many loans did you close last month? One. No, you haven't been doing it. You've been doing this 1 year 20 times in a row. If you're still doing mortgages the way you did mortgages 20 years ago, you're not learning, you're not adapting, you're not improving. You're doing it 1 year and then you're repeating it for 20 years in a row. You're not growing.
True.
There's nothing good about that.
No. Well, you talk about throughout the book, and in essence, my perception, and I want to know your thoughts, is that corporations in the past might have really participated in, and actually mentoring became part of their corporate strategy, but you really don't see that now. What you see are marketing slogans that say they coach and they say that they provide that type of support, but the individual is really pretty much left on their own to go get it. And really, that's what you're talking about, is having that objective third party person. Do you think it ever will go back to the other where,
No.
no, it won't. So, yeah.
Well, I could tell you why.
Sure.
So salespeople, when you give them things that are included or free or complimentary or part of the package, they don't see any value in it. They don't engage. The only way somebody engages with coaching is if they're paying for it. Because there's pain. I'm paying, so I better do something with this. If it's free, they'll listen, but they won't change. So part of coaching, what you have to understand is when you have a coach or a mentor, what they're about to do is hold up a mirror and say, this is the problem. Now, what are we going to do about that? And the moment they do that, you don't like them because it doesn't feel good.
It
It's
doesn't
like,
feel
hey,
good,
it's like, hey. And so if that's free, right, then they just disengage. But if they're paying for it, right, there's skin in the game. There's pain involved in not doing what your coach or mentor is telling you to do, then they'll change and they'll adjust. And so any business that gives away free coaching or free mentorship, it doesn't work.
Good point, for sure. But when you look at our industry in particular, and you've been in it a long time, that you really are seeing that. In fact, I had Rick Rocco on the other day, and he was talking about that 191,000 loan officers out of 250,000 loan officers do basically one loan a month. And in other words, that's the real numbers. That's what it
Yeah,
is.
they're not even making a living.
They're not even making a living. And
Correct.
lenders don't, they'd rather have a warm body than actually
A lot of
address.
companies. Yeah, a lot of
Yeah,
companies for
right.
sure.
Yeah. And so the solution set is an a industry that has so many poor performers and they don't address it, therefore expenses are out of whack, that you think you would change that model because that model doesn't work.
So the challenge, though, is in the mortgage industry. If you think of most of the mortgage companies, and I'll say mortgage brokers, independent mortgage banks, who's the CEO, right?
Sales
Who's
guy.
a salesperson, right? A
Yeah.
salesman, woman, whatever. But they used to be a loan officer.
Right.
They became a manager. They broke off on their own, created their own company, built, right? But who trained them how to be a CEO?
Yeah, I agree.
No, they didn't get any CEO training. And so they're just trying to build and grow for the sake of building and growing. When you talk to most independent mortgage bank CEOs, you say, "What's your exit strategy?" It's
Right.
like, "My what?
Yeah, they
Why
don't have
would I
one.
want to exit?"
Right.
It's like, "Oh wow. Okay.
That's
You've got no business training." And that's the problem.
sure. I agree with that for sure.
Yeah.
I see them not really recognizing numbers. I mean,
I
pretty,
agree.
not
Yeah.
understanding the ramifications. So, talk about some other actionable steps that people could take to move in that from the 99% group to that 1%.
Well, so in my book, the first chapter is about the five whys. Second chapter
Sure.
is about mentorship. Like what? So I always look at it and say, if you're going to give me business advice, whoever you are, right? The first question I'm going to ask you is, I need to see your tax return.
Good.
And your tax return has to have an extra zero over mine. If it doesn't, then I don't want your advice. At all. I don't want your feedback. I don't want, because you might influence me. And then I'm going to get your result, which I
Yeah.
don't want. So I don't
Right.
want your feedback,
Right.
like at all. But if you do have an extra zero, then I'm going to throw my system in the garbage. Right? I don't care about my system. What I care about is the result because of my why. My why is clear. You know, I have filters, right? I can't hurt anybody. I have to be loyal. I have to perform with integrity. I have to be truthful, right? There's filters on my activities, but do I care if I say this script or that script? No, I care about the script that works, right? And so if somebody has a better script, because they have a better result, I'm going to throw my script in the garbage. I'm not emotionally attached to any of my systems. The moment somebody showed me something better,
You're there.
I switch on a dime, like
Yeah.
zero
Sure.
waiting time. And so, but I hear all the time loan officers saying, "Well, my way is I don't care what your way is. You close one loan a month. Your way doesn't work. Stop it." Right. So I'm showing you a way.
Right.
So one of my claims is I can get on an airplane, fly to any city in America, land safely,
Right.
and take 10 loan apps that day. People say, "No, you can't." Or why don't you ask me how? Why don't you ask me what I would do when the plane lands? What's step one? What is step two? What is step three? What is step
Right.
four? Why are you asking me how instead of telling me I can't? Because I'll bet you right now $10,000 that I can put $10,000 on the table. I'm prepared to put $10,000 on the table. Are you? No?
Right.
Then why are you so sure? I'm sure because I've done it. Right? And so, but they're so focused on not changing.
Correct.
And that comes from a place of just not understanding what they want the money for. Do you
Sure.
understood if you understood what you would do with the money to the point that you were weeping, then you would change.
Correct. But do you think that also is a function, especially in our industry, of the age of the employee, especially on the loan officer side, that change is hard for people as they get
think changes,
older.
I think changes are for all humans though.
Sure, that's true.
I mean, I've never met somebody that goes, "Woohoo, I love change." You
No,
know, I mean,
not happen.
some people think they do.
Right.
They, you know, they think they like change, you know, but you know, my response to that is, you know, how do you wake up in the morning? Right? Do you wake up the same way? Do you make coffee the same way? Do you shower the same way? Like, have you ever gotten out of the shower and go, "Did I wash my stomach? I can't remember if I washed my stomach or not."
Yeah.
Like, it's because we're doing things the same way over and over and over again.
It's a shortcut, yeah, in
And
essence.
so when somebody says, even let's just say you're right-handed, and somebody says, "Look, you'll make an extra $1 million a year, just become left-handed." Yeah, I don't want to become left-handed. I'm right-handed. I like my right hand. Like, no, I don't want to. It's $1 million a year to learn how to use your left hand. Are you kidding me right now? And so, but they don't, right? Like, they
Sure.
don't. They literally don't want to change. And so that applies to all things,
True.
right? Your scripts, how you go to work, how you check your emails, how you like stop checking your emails. What do you mean? What do you mean stop checking my emails? Well, that's busy work.
Right.
Like,
True.
you're not making money checking your emails.
Yeah, it's
Stop
not a
checking your
set.
voicemails at every 20 minutes.
Yeah, true, very true. So, share a couple thoughts and about some other takeaways that people can implement.
I mean, I come back to find people that are qualified to give you advice. Like, would you take, if you wanted to lose weight and you went to the gym to get a trainer, and the trainer was 300 pounds. Is that somebody you want training you on how to lose weight? No, they're not qualified. They might know the knowledge, right? But they're not behaving with it. So
Right.
no, I don't want them as my coach on how to lose weight. And so the same applies in the mortgage industry. So if you're in the mortgage industry, find a loan officer who's doing loans at a much larger volume than you. And then do as they do, right? Don't fight the person.
Right.
And I can promise you, it won't feel good. Change doesn't feel good. It doesn't.
Correct.
And so if you're looking for feel good, I would say get out of sales. You've chosen the wrong industry. And so what we're here to do is help people and make money. But if your number one goal is helping people, if that's your first goal, then you're not in tune with your why. And you say, "Well, that is my why." Well, if that's your why, helping people is your number one goal, then go volunteer at the United Way.
Right.
Oh, you want to make money. Oh, then that has to be your number one goal. Because if you're not making money, if you're not profitable, then you can't grow. If you can't grow, you can't create opportunities for your team. If you can't create opportunities for your team's going to leave you.
True.
And then how are you helping people?
Well, you're
If your
right
team
on
leaves
for
you, how are you helping people if your team leaves you?
correct.
Now what are you doing?
Yeah. Anything else you would like to share? We only have a few minutes left. I mean, this has been fabulous.
There's a video on my website, eric-mitchell.com, about it's a 15-minute video summary of my book that'll help people understand the power
Right.
of tapping into your why. There's some exercises on there that prove the concepts. It's free, right? You take a look, and if that's interesting to someone, then buy the book. Happy to provide feedback to anybody that has questions about it. My passion project is I had a traumatic moment that I'm hoping others will avoid. Right? I was asked about my why, I couldn't answer it effectively. I disappointed one of my mentors. He and I are still great friends to this day. And he laughs because it wasn't as traumatic to him as it was to me in the
Yeah,
moment. And he's like,
sure.
"Eric, I mean, I remember it, but it wasn't as
Yeah.
traumatic as you made it out to be, right? You're telling yourself a story that wasn't what's going on in my head." I was like, "Okay, well, that story drove me, and so it's okay."
Well, I love your book, and I think the mental side in the mortgage world is not discussed enough. And I do think that this really is a framework for moving into that 1%. And I think you did a fabulous job. So I appreciate you sharing your thoughts today. So, how can people get a hold of you?
Eric-Mitchell.com, Eric hyphen Mitchell, MITCHELL.com. All my information's there.
Okay, great. And so connect with them on LinkedIn for sure. And so I want to thank you again, Eric, for sharing your thoughts. And I want to thank our listeners and certainly subscribe to get our weekly podcast. Thanks so much, Eric.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Mortgage Manager Playbook. You can catch up on all our episodes by subscribing to receive each week a new show. Don't forget to share this podcast with your friends and team members. If you're looking to increase production, call me to discuss my prospecting sales training program, Ramping Up Realtor Referral Sources. Check out my website, www.patsherlock.com.